It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Cancer Reporting System tracks about 30,000 newly diagnosed cancer cases reported each year across our state. We examine the latest developments in diagnosis and treatment with your questions front and center. Call in now at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Joshua Lang is Associate Director of Translational Research at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center and Associate Professor of Medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Lang, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here.
Well, let's talk about receiving this $11 million federal grant to support prostate cancer research. The center now designated a specialized program of research excellence by the National Cancer Institute. How will this funding support research?
You know, it's really an incredible honor. There's only a few sites across the country that have this type of funding from the National Cancer Institute. And really the heart of this kind of research is focused on our patients, that we want to do what's called translational research, where we are engaging our patients really at every step of the research spectrum, from discovery to translation, meaning the finding, taking those findings from the bench laboratory to patients at the bedside, and clinical trials as well. So every project has a large clinical trial, and it's some actually multi-site clinical trials where we have patients that are being enrolled across the country at other cancer centers. So this is really a foundational funding opportunity and one that we're just so excited about how it's going to help accelerate all of our research in prostate cancer.
Maybe this could be under that huge umbrella of translational, but how can a cancer patient know what clinical trials are really open to them and a good match for their cancer diagnosis?
That's such a great question. You know, really, when I think about where we're at right now, we've had more therapies approved by the FDA in the last 5 years than I think probably the, 15 or 20 years prior to that. And nearly all of those therapies were in clinical trials here at the Carbone Cancer Center at UW Health. So there's so many opportunities. And I think this is really where it's incumbent on patients to, one, ask your doctor, with the therapies that you're recommending now, is there something else that I could be considering? What are those opportunities? And whether that's your doctor in your community or saying, or for folks coming down to the UW Carbone Cancer Center at UW Health. We do have websites where patients can access that information. We also have a helpline where our Cancer Connect group, which is to help identify what are potential clinical trial options. So there really is a spectrum. And I think this is one of the other things I'm really excited about is that, while we often develop new therapies for patients with the latest stages of cancer, we've also found over the years that using those same therapies for patients with newly diagnosed disease or earlier in the disease process can be even more effective. So again, we don't necessarily need to wait until there's no other options. Sometimes the best option is to look for a clinical trial now, wherever people are at in their journey.
I want to look closer here again at prostate cancer. Most common cancer in American men, that's according to the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. How is the center improving prostate cancer treatment?
Yeah, such a great question. And it's really even more important in the state of Wisconsin, where unfortunately, our state is 41st in the country for survival of men with prostate cancer. And it really is a combination of two things, where patients are being diagnosed later or not screened for prostate cancer, or that they're not getting access to molecular testing to understand, what are those genetic changes that lead to the cancer developing, or getting more aggressive therapy when they should be getting access to those treatment options. So that's where, within the cancer center, what we're doing with the prostate spore is one project that I'm leading is using what we call liquid biopsies. So can we find cancer cells from a blood draw instead of doing a tissue biopsy and a way to better monitor or understand the cancer as it changes over time? So that's one project that's embedded. Other projects involve some novel types of imaging scans. So there's kind of these classical PET scans, which frankly did not work very well for men with prostate cancer. We've had some revolutions in these types of imaging scans just over the last few years, many of which were pioneered here at the Carbone Cancer Center. And we now have embedded in other clinical trials and even routine clinical care. So patients, no matter where they're at in their journey, should have access to the most cutting edge technologies.
There's also this cryoablation, this interventional radiology procedure. Can you, the extreme cold, can you describe what's going on there with cancerous cells?
Yeah, absolutely. So there were, and actually, if we go back, 40, 50 years, this idea that we could do targeted therapies, and historically that was with radiation therapies. And we found that could be a very effective against smaller localized areas of cancer, or if there's areas of cancer that are causing other symptoms, such as pain. Prostate cancer most commonly spreads to bone for patients with metastatic disease. So those are some new options that we've had. And cryotherapy is this idea of, well, maybe there's some other ways that we can try to administer a local treatment that might have fewer side effects compared to treating a larger or doing some other surgical removal. It's really critical that we make sure that we completely understand where the cancer is to help define how do we target that therapy. So that's where, again, those new advanced PET scans, MRI imaging, all of that really helps to define, who's the patient who's most likely to benefit from one of these types of cryotherapies, for example, with as few side effects as possible, but also who wouldn't, and how do we get the person the right therapy for them?
We're talking about the latest developments in cancer research and treatment at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. Dr. Josh Lang with us, Center's Associate Director of Translational Research. You can join in with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234. Turning now to proton therapy, UW-Carbone Cancer Center planning to expand by opening this new facility, and UW Health says it will be the first location in the country to offer upright proton beam therapy. Can you explain, first of all, how does proton therapy work?
Yeah, great question. So proton therapies are, it's a way of delivering a specific type of radiation, and it's been in a process of development really for the last 20 to 30 years. However, the challenge was always how do we generate and administer this novel kind of radiation therapy? And the historical approach is using delivery systems where patients had to lie very still, lie flat on their backs, which I will say can be hard for some of our patients. So we've had some great collaborations and interactions with industry who have pioneered this novel approach of upright proton therapy. And I think one of the best ways to describe it is that for some folks, sitting upright is actually a much more natural way and much easier actually to target and deliver this precise proton therapy. Now, at the same time, while there have been some early clinical trials that have shown some success with proton therapy, there's also a great need to expand and more robustly study proton therapy and, who are the patients that most benefit from it or different combination therapies that might make this even more effective. But also, who doesn't benefit? And I think that's one of the other really exciting opportunities that's provided by having the first proton therapy center in the state of Wisconsin, because we can then do other clinical trials and find novel ways to make this treatment even better.
Acknowledging as well the steep costs associated with using this type of technology, there have been reports that these proton therapy equipment can cost tens of millions of dollars. How do you balance the costs associated with putting these types of technologies at work for patients?
Yeah, great question. I would actually say if we go back a decade, the costs of these technologies were in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So now that we're in the tens of millions of dollars, it's still a lot of money, but it really does reduce at least the upfront cost. And I think if we're able to deliver therapies that are more effective, but also safer with fewer side effects, that also decreases the burden on the medical system for other longer-term follow-up or managing side effects. So as we look out, 3, 5, 10 years, that the more patients we're able to help, but make it a safer type of therapy, I think that's really going to reap rewards for our patients and, for the health system as well as a whole.
Dr. Josh Lang from UW-Carbone Cancer Center, his specialty, by the by, is genitourinary cancer and medical oncology as we break down the latest research that could lead to better treatments and earlier detection. Call in about cancer. Ask a question that's on your mind, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn what's on the horizon for cancer research and treatment with oncologist Josh Lang here, Associate Director of Translational Research at the UW Carbone Cancer Center. You can join the conversation at any point. Call in to ask a question. Share your comment about cancer. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Lang, let's switch gears to breast cancer, where the American Cancer Society says triple negative breast cancer accounts for 10 to 15% of breast cancers diagnosed. Your center testing a triple negative breast cancer vaccine. What can you tell us?
You know, triple negative breast cancer is one of the most aggressive forms of breast cancer. And it's so important that, one, a diagnosis is made earlier, and really trying to find new ways to attack this disease. And there's been incredible advances in terms of our understanding of the whys. Why does triple negative breast cancer? Is it genetic mutations? Is it something else happening in the cancer? But also, are there ways that we can harness the immune system to try to find and attack these cancer cells as well? You know, it's one of the hallmarks of cancer is that when it first develops, it finds ways to hide away or hide from immune cells that might otherwise destroy it. So that's what we're trying to do with these novel types of vaccine approaches, of find ways that we can activate the immune system that could more effectively find and kill these cancer cells. You know, we've had great breakthroughs in the field of immunotherapies for so many different types of cancers over the last decade. And this is, I think, a very exciting new way to target triple negative aggressive breast cancer from a very different approach.
The center this year administered the triple negative breast cancer vaccine to its first patient at the UW. How is the patient doing? What can you say there?
You know, everything that we've heard so far is that it's been a well-tolerated therapy. And as we continue to enroll patients to these trials, this is where we're looking, you know, not just how well-tolerated is it, but what kind of responses do we see and how can we keep pushing or fighting off this disease? So we're really excited to continue to enroll patients to these trials. And I will say, you know, just so incredibly grateful for our patients. You know, we do everything possible to make this a safe and very closely monitored for really any clinical trial. And when our patients put their faith in us and say, you know what, I'm obviously doing this to help myself, but I want to help everyone fighting cancer, that we'll learn from these trials in ways that will help patients across the world. It really is just such an honor, and we're so excited to be able to enroll patients to these studies.
I'm wondering about these vaccines in terms of targeting a cancer to have that cancer never return or never appear in the first place. And I'm thinking about the HPV vaccine. You know, the virus stays in the body for a long time, but it can then cause some types of cancers. Could there be more types of these types of vaccines on the horizon to prevent, you know, cancers from becoming cancer in the first place?
You know, the best treatment for a cancer is the one that we don't have to give because we prevented that cancer from developing in the first place. The HPV vaccine, in terms of how it's been able to prevent and decrease the incidence of especially cervical cancers, has been one of the greatest success stories in terms of the thousands and thousands of women who never needed therapy because they were vaccinated against HPV. So as we identify those cancers that are associated with, for example, viral infections, as with HPV, that's something where we really have a platform where we can develop and expand or treat many patients to prevent these cancers. And there's a lot of work trying to understand, well, some cancers can be caused or related to viruses, but what else could be causing a cancer to develop? And can we find vaccine targets that might be preventative from a different perspective? So many opportunities there.
You know, those are really big questions. And, you know, wondering then, how do you balance those questions with workforce and having enough people to work on these challenges with cancer? You know, we've heard our state has a deficit of healthcare workers, healthcare positions. How is the UW Carbone Cancer Center doing amid workforce challenges?
Yeah, I think as I think nearly everyone has been impacted, especially as the pandemic eases in terms of the people who are able to be a part of our mission. So every industry has been hit, and the healthcare industry has certainly been hit as well. And I think a lot of provider fatigue and burnout, especially after the worst of the COVID pandemic. So this is something where, we still have these amazing people who, at every level in the health system, from our schedulers, the folks at the front desk, to our medical assistants, that as people are looking for opportunities to help patients, there's so many different ways that we can do that. So as we expand our educational mission at the University of Wisconsin and at UW Health to help train and bring people into the workforce, really making sure that they have those opportunities and can see the impact that they're making. What we do at the Carbone Cancer Center, I think, is both inspirational and aspirational. So we are recruiting, and we're very excited as the continued growth of the Carbone Cancer Center at UW Health continues, especially with our new facility that's going to be opening on the east side of Madison as well, which will, I think, our goal is to meet the needs for our patients across the entire state. And especially as we've seen that, especially, I think, in our rural communities, that there really is a deficit of healthcare providers. We need to step in, and as the state university hospital system, we need to step into that space and be able to provide cutting-edge care for everyone who needs it.
Dr. Josh Lang with us, the UW Carbone Cancer Center's Associate Director of Translational Research. As we look at ongoing research and treatments, breakthroughs in cancer, you can join in 800-642-1234. We've heard from Alan. Ellen from La Crosse wants to know, what happens if someone's insurance won't allow them to have certain cancer treatments?
It's a challenge that we face every single day. And that's where we've built a team of pharmacists and other folks who really work in terms of, one, is a therapy recommended? So how do we get people that therapy? And whether it's if their insurance denies access, then how do we work with other mechanisms? So the UW Health does have other patient support mechanisms. There are other foundations across the country. We work with different industry pharmaceutical companies that can also support or decrease the cost of medications. So this is a very complex question. And, as we look at expansion of Medicaid is a great example where that really has allowed us to help more patients in need. I also think about our VA system, our veteran system, that also has allowed us to provide care for patients who may not have access otherwise. So there's a number of different models out there. And the short is that we have a lot of people here to help and try to figure that out. So if you hit a wall, keep calling. Call us, see what we can do to help.
You've talked about access challenges in rural areas. What about low-income families? How does the center ensure access to care among people of low income?
And I think especially those barriers to access, we have to be reaching out. And whether that's increasing the number of clinics, especially from our primary care clinic providers, for them to be in different communities and make it easier for folks to come in. And really just being able to call the number for the Cancer Connect number at the Carbone Cancer Center at UW Health, that those kinds of access opportunities really do exist. So the more that we can do and the more we can outreach to our patients who need help but aren't able to access that in traditional means is absolutely critical.
So much on your plate. What are you most excited to see the UW Carbone Cancer Center accomplish this year?
I think there's two big areas. The first is, how do we understand cancer? And I mentioned our projects in liquid biopsy research. So that is a number of faculty, Dr. Mohammed Murtaza, Dr. Marina Sharifi, Dr. George Zhao, myself, so many others are in the space of, can we find cancer cells from a blood draw instead of a biopsy in a way that's easier us to screen for cancer for people who are at risk, but also find cancer and also understand how it changes. And if we can understand how it changes when resistance develops, that interfaces directly with our clinical trials. So we can say, you know what, we've actually figured out why the cancer stopped responding to a therapy. And here's a new therapy that we've brought in for a clinical trial that will target that resistance mechanism directly. And I think that's the heart of precision medicine and getting the right therapy for the right patient at the right time.
What about the toxicities in treatment? We only have about a little time left here, but the toxicity can be such an issue for patients as well.
Absolutely. And that's where I think of the other great advances in oncology over the last 10 years, a lot of it is actually supportive care. So ways that we can prevent side effects. So that's where more aggressive management to prevent things like nausea and vomiting, which are much less common now from chemotherapies. Then also with some of our new targeted therapies, that's where the side effects are certainly less than the ones that we historically used, and they work so much better as well. And that's also where we've worked with a new group of patient navigators and patient support groups with our supportive care teams. That if someone's having a side effect, we don't want them to sit at home and suffer. We want them to call us right away so we can find new ways to intervene, new ways to help.
Dr. Lang, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to join today. It's been a fantastic morning.
Dr. Josh Lang is Associate Director of Translational Research at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. This conversation about cancer continues ahead with clinical trials and novel cancer therapies in oncologist fields. Your question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Cancer encompasses a wide variety of types. We learn about the latest human clinical trials and novel cancer therapies, and you can join in along the way. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Natalia Uboha is an oncologist and faculty leader for cancer therapy discovery and development at UW-Carbone Cancer Center, associate professor in the Department of Medicine at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, specializing in gastrointestinal malignancies. Dr. Uboha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good morning. So the Cancer Therapy Discovery and Development Program, you know, focusing on the first in human clinical trials, which of the current trials are you most excited about and you can tell us about?
Well, there are a number of different clinical studies that are available at UW right now. And really, the type of drugs that we are developing for cancer have changed tremendously over the last couple decades. Really, most of the chemo drugs, most of the cancer drugs that are being developed right now are not chemotherapy anymore, which is incredible. Because chemotherapy, when I tell my patients about chemotherapy, I tell them it's a blunt tool. It's a tool that kills cells that divide fast, but it also kills a lot of innocent bystanders, you know, kills that divide, that kills cells that are normal in our bodies and grow fast anyways, like kill cells that live in the bone marrow. And so most recently, the drugs that are being developed for cancer treatments are much more targeted. And there are really two different classes of drugs that have now become the main anti-cancer treatments. The targeted drugs, the drugs that really go after the particular mutations that are present in tumor cells and that drive those cancer cells to grow. And the other big class of drugs is immunotherapy drugs. And these are the drugs that have the capacity to really harness the activity of patients' immune system to help attack those cancer drugs, those cancer cells. And both of those types of agents are in development in clinical trials and are available at UW.
You know, we've heard the term precision medicine or targeted therapy for diseases. What is happening in the area of precision immune oncology? I think that's what you were picking up on there.
Absolutely. And, you know, this has really changed how we treat a number of diseases. What we're able to do now, we're able to really sequence many different genes that are present in cancer cells. Cancer is really a disease related to mutations that cells accumulate. And because of these mutations, cells don't die normally. And so what we're able to do now is really look at each individual patient's cancers and see what mutations are present. And it's more than just an academic exercise, because when we find mutations that are present in patient cancers, we're actually able now to give drugs that turn off the genes that are altered by these mutations. And so we are giving treatments that are very specific for patients' individual cancers. And not only does it result in better activity of their of other treatments for patients' cancers, but we're also sparing patients' toxicity from not giving them treatments that are very much unlikely to work.
Hmm. is then genetic testing part of the cancer journey, part of the process to figure out a more targeted treatment plan for the patient?
Absolutely. And there are two different types of genetic testing we do. At UW, all patients who have advanced cancers have their tumors undergo what we call next generation sequencing or molecular testing. And Dr. Burkhardt and Dr. Deming have been instrumental in spearheading this program at UW and really launching a statewide, what we call precision molecular tumor board, where we help review these results because all of our patients' tumors get sequenced. We get results telling us what mutations are present. And then the big part is analyzing and trying to figure out what do we do about it. And so we now, for years, have had this statewide molecular tumor board where we can review patients' cases from across the state and help advise on standard treatments or even refer patients to clinical trials based on the mutations that are found.
That sounds like that sounds like a really large amount of collaboration among scientists and physicians.
Absolutely. And, you know, the tumor board is attended not only by the specialists from UW, like pathologists, medical oncologists, but we also have medical oncologists call in from across the state. And I think it's definitely is a teamwork, and it has to continue to be a teamwork to help patients, not only who are here at UW, but across our state.
What are the challenges of fighting cancer in rural areas where patients are not close to a cutting-edge clinic?
It is definitely a big challenge. You know, commute is not easy in Wisconsin, especially in the winter. To live 3 to 4 hours away from a big cancer center can be a challenge. I think what we have really expanded upon at UW is access to our services via telemedicine. Mm. And so we are able to provide consultations to patients who live in more remote locations via telemedicine and at least advice on treatments. And then let the patient know, is it worth traveling to UW for a clinical trial? Does the clinical trial exist? Or would the patient be getting the same type of care closer to home?
We're talking with Dr. Natalia Uboha as we look at clinical trials, the research and the development and diagnosis treatment of cancer. You can join in along the way with your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Glenn in Milwaukee with a question. Glenn, hi. What would you like to ask about cancer?
Hi. I have a question about T-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Is there any research being done on that in methods of dealing with it other than chemo?
Glenn, thank you for that question. Go ahead, Dr. Uboha.
So, as part of our early drug cancer development program, we do have a number of studies that allow for patients with hematological malignancies to participate. And as I said earlier, most of the new drugs are not chemotherapy. But we also have a dedicated hematology team that runs all of our hematology-based trials. And they are a team that's led by Dr. Vaishali, who probably are a better team for you to connect with and answer those questions. But I think, you know, in terms of really getting this information live, what I do want to point out that we have a team of research nurses who are able to connect with patients like you, Glenn, and other patients from around the state or even outside of the state and really help determine, is there a trial that's specific for your situation and your type of cancer? This research nurse team is led by Sarah Cotilla and has really tremendously improved access to our clinical trials at UW.
Glenn, thanks for the call. I want to turn to your specialty in gastrointestinal cancers, cancers developing along the digestive tract, the GI system. What are you seeking to learn about these cancers that could change treatment protocols in the future?
Yeah, thank you for this question. So I specialize in treating patients with gastrointestinal cancers, but I have a particular focus on upper GI cancers or gastroesophageal cancers, so the cancers that arise either in the esophagus or the stomach. And these types of cancers have been really on the rise recently in the U.S. And what has really changed in the way we treat these cancers is, again, personalizing the care for each individual's case. We do a lot of biomarker testing to determine what can we add to chemotherapy. Is it just chemotherapy that will help this patient? Or can we actually add an immunotherapy drug, so the drug that helps the immune system attack the cancer cells? Can we add a targeted drug, like an antibody, because of the presence of particular antennas on these cancer cells? There are a lot of new biomarkers that we will be testing for over the next few years to really further personalize the treatments of patients with these diseases. And it's exciting to see that we are starting to move the needle.
What do these biomarkers inform? What do they tell you? And translate that for us who are not on the bench or physicians.
So this is really a way to further characterize a cancer cell. And with the way I explain it to my patients in clinic, I say, we need to look what antennas are present on your cancer cells. Hmm. Because every cancer cell, even if it's still esophageal cancer, depending on each patient's individual cancer cell could have a different set of antennas that tell this particular their particular cancer to divide and grow. And so when we talk about biomarkers, we're really talking about figuring out what is the set of antennas that signal your particular cancer. And depending on those antennas and which ones are present and or which ones are absent, we can really pick the right treatment and further personalize the treatment of these patients. Chemotherapy continues to play a role, but we are now able to add additional drugs to chemo to be more nuanced about the treatments that we provide. Mm. And to improve patients' prognosis.
I appreciate that analogy. You mentioned esophageal cancers and the American Cancer Society saying esophageal cancer usually found by accident while testing for other medical issues. What do you hope to learn through your esophageal cancer research?
That is correct, that a lot of times when patients are diagnosed with esophageal cancer, they are diagnosed because they already have symptoms. And at that point, the disease requires more than just surgery, or sometimes it's already even spread to other places. The research that we are conducting at UW is really trying to improve upon the activity of chemotherapy and immunotherapy for the treatment of patients with this cancer. We have a number of clinical trials that are looking at various options in patients who were just diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal cancer. We are also looking at the clinical trials in patients who have had many different treatments now and are looking for options in the absence of any other standard of care treatments. I am also involved in running a clinical trial where we are further personalizing the treatment of patients with this disease by looking at what we call tumor bulk, meaning should we approach somebody who has 10 different spots related to their cancer the same as we should approach somebody who has, for example, only two metastases? Maybe we should be more aggressive when we catch the disease earlier, even though it has spread to other places. And so we have a study that looks at the use of, for example, radiation, trying to treat these metastatic spots in patients who have cancer that has spread to a limited number of spots. So many different venues and trying to improve the outcomes for patients with this disease.
In that cancer journey, Dr. Natalia Uboha, an oncologist and faculty leader for cancer therapy discovery and development at UW-Carbone Cancer Center, fielding questions about a cancer diagnosis, managing your cancer journey. Call in with a question. Share your experience, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss cancer treatment, managing care, potential research breakthroughs with UW-Carbone Cancer Center. Dr. Natalia Uboha leads its therapy discovery and development program, co-directs the Wisconsin Oncology Network, a collaborative research network with two other states. Call in with your question about cancer, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You had called chemotherapy a blunt tool. What progress are you making with chemo in this area and the chemo that we're seeing now?
That's a very good question, because even though I did say that it's a blunt tool and that most of the drugs are not chemotherapy anymore, we are starting to develop a new set of chemotherapy agents called antibody drug conjugates, which is a targeted chemotherapy. So rather than giving chemotherapy that goes everywhere in the body, these new drugs that are being developed right now, and we refer to them as ADCs frequently in clinic, and some of them are already approved for treatment of diseases such as gastric cancer and breast cancer. These drugs are a combination of what I call a hook, an antibody. That hook attaches to, again, the antenna that is present on the cancer cells. And another piece of those ADCs is chemotherapy, or we call it a payload. So it basically delivers chemotherapy to the place where it should only be active.
Wow.
It delivers them directly to the cancer cells or to the cells that are present right near the cancer cells. The idea is that now we can be more precise with the chemotherapy treatments, be more active against the cancer cells, but also really spare some of the normal cells from the toxicities associated with chemotherapy.
Katie is a physician from Duluth, sent us an email here asking, for adults and kids who have had chemotherapy, what do you think about the need for cardiovascular risk stratification and surveillance?
This is a very good question, especially as we are dealing with more and more survivors from cancer, which is good, especially people who were diagnosed at a young age. It really, my answer to this is that it really depends on what kind of chemotherapy they have received. Not all chemotherapy agents are toxic to the heart, and so not always that type of surveillance is indicated. So I would encourage to work closely with an oncologist and cardiologist to determine the plan for each individual patient.
The Association of Affordable Medicine says 130 generic drugs are in short supply, and the shortage includes chemotherapy drugs. Are your cancer patients feeling the effects of drug shortages?
Very good question. We have an amazing team of pharmacists who have helped us over the last years and are continuing to help us deal and foresee the shortages. Fortunately, at UW, we were able to avoid significant effects on our patient care because of the shortages. But it is the issue that has now made national news, and this is something that we are very much aware of. But I'm fortunate to be in a place where we have safeguards in place to help us hopefully foresee and deal with it. But it is an issue that is on our radar.
Okay, on the radar, but able to manage it accordingly. So I'm going to just reintroduce you here as we talk about cancer research. We have oncologist Dr. Natalia Uboha, and we are looking at all phases of cancer research and development, managing treatment paths. You can join in with your question at 800-642-1234. You co-direct the Wisconsin Oncology Network, and the network allowing community health centers to enroll patients in the UW Carbone Cancer Center's clinical trials. What can people expect when signing up for a clinical trial through your center and through this network?
The idea behind Wisconsin Oncology Network is to be able to bring the clinical trials that are being developed in one of the cancer centers in Wisconsin to a few other cancer centers across the state. And the idea is to really increase access to clinical research. For example, currently I am leading a clinical trial for patients with gastroesophageal cancers that looks at the new chemotherapy combination for the treatment of this disease. And this trial is open Even though the trial was developed at UW, the trial is open at four different locations across the state. And because it is open in four different locations, patients can have access to this type of research without having to travel, a few hours, as we discussed earlier, to have a cancer center. So the idea is really to increase access to clinical trials and research.
And it looks like you're taking a multi-state approach with South Dakota in the mix, Illinois, I think.
That's work in progress. The trial that I am running is open in four Wisconsin sites right now. But yes, the idea is to improve access to more to further communities in our Midwest area.
Do you mind if we walk in your shoes for a moment? There is so much activity in this area of research. What are your day-to-day responsibilities like as faculty leader of the Discovery Program?
So I see patients two and a half days per week. My clinic days are busy, but I love seeing my patients. My patients are my inspiration to do what I do the rest of the time. The reason I do the work that I do with the research and the clinical trials is because of the people that I see in my clinic and because of the people and their families that I meet. And they inspire me with their strength. I learn from them every day. And when you see these individual stories and meet individual families, that really what drives the rest of the work that is done behind the scenes. And really to run a clinical trial, it does take the whole village to get these studies in place. You know, there's a lot of people who help us with making appointments. There's a whole team of research nurses and research coordinators. There are people who help us work with pharmaceutical partners to ensure that the trial is in place correctly at our center. There is institutional review committees, ethics committees, scientific committees. So it really does take a huge infrastructure, which we fortunately had to have at Carbon Cancer Center. But really the inspiration comes from what I do in clinic, side by side with my nurses and nurse practitioners.
I would imagine too, being able to see patients in clinic helps you maybe understand the research you're doing in the lab more deeply from a human approach.
Oh, absolutely. And our phase one research program or early drug development research program is a group for physicians who are not only specializing and have experience in developing new drugs and bringing these new drugs to clinic, but they are also experts in their own field of oncology. So I specialize in gastrointestinal oncology, but we also have, for example, Dr. Ma, who specializes in skin cancers. We have Dr. Burkhardt and Dr. Wasinski, who specialize in breast cancers. So not only do we have experience in bringing new cancer treatments to clinic, but we also are experts in treating our individual diseases. And so that is, I think, a really good match for patients when they see somebody who knows the natural history of breast cancer. They can not only advise, exactly, they can not only advise, is this a good clinical trial, but they can also say, is this a good clinical trial for this particular patient?
Dr. Natalia Uboha is with an oncologist, UW Carbone Cancer Center. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.